Hi, this is Pastor Bill, and we had a little problem on Sunday morning, and the first part of the message didn't record. And so what I'm doing here in my office is I'm just catching you up to where the recording then kicks in on Sunday morning. We were looking at the background to the chapters that we're looking at in Judges 6 and 7 as we look at God's preparation of Gideon for service. And what has happened so far is Israel has sinned again. They refuse to listen to God. And God disciplines them by bringing in Midian. And they oppress Israel. Israel is living in fear. And eventually, Israel cries out to God for deliverance. And God answers that cry by raising up Gideon to be a deliverer. And what we're doing is we're looking at that process that Gideon must go through to become effective for God. It's the same process we go through as God prepares us for service. And the lessons we've learned so far is this. God uses ordinary people to do extraordinary things. Gideon was timid, he was fearful, and he was uncertain, kind of like us. And so therefore, we qualify to be used by God. But we also saw that the first thing God calls Gideon to do is to obey him. And where he has to start that obedience is at home. There's an idol there that's competing for the affection of Gideon's heart. And so Gideon must tear that down right there in his home. And so God is going to begin calling us to be obedient in the home. If we can't be holy there, God can't use us to impact the world. We also saw how important that choice of obedience was. Gideon could have said no to God. He could have stayed right where he was, terrified, threshing wheat in a wine press with no touch of God on his life. But a yes to God opened the doors for God's work in his life, that exciting work that we're going to see in the next chapter. One writer said this, obedience is the key that unlocks the door to every profound spiritual experience. Or to look at it from the opposite angle, one writer put it this way, to pay the price of obedience is to escape the cost of disobedience. And Israel was certainly experiencing the cost of disobedience, and it was extremely painful. So what we've seen so far is God uses ordinary people, but the people he uses are people who are willing to obey him. That's foundational. We pick up the story now where Gideon's coming alive to God. He's hearing God's voice. He's obeying what he's hearing. Now he's ready to step into God's larger plan for his life. And we're going to see, though, that God's work of preparation is still going to continue. God must remove his self-dependence and replace it with God-dependence. And we're also going to see the step out of the comfort zone to be used by God. Gideon's going to have to learn to deal with his fear, and he is going to have to replace that fear with risky faith. So here's our outline. Gideon must become God-dependent, Gideon must learn to handle fear correctly, and Gideon must choose to trust God with risky faith. So we come to our first point.
Gideon must become God-dependent. He's not right now. We're going to see as he steps into God's plan here for his life, we're going to see that he is still too self-reliant, still trusting in his own planning, trusting in his own ability to gather the resources. We're going to see how God changes that. So he answers God's call, but I want you to notice something that is missing. As you read through Judges 6 and the Judges 7, as Gideon begins to answer God's call, there's one thing I don't see there. And you know what it is? Prayer. I don't see Gideon going to God and saying, well, God, how do you want me to do this? What I see Gideon doing is just doing the obvious thing. Okay, I'm going to go up against Midian and there are 135,000 soldiers. Here's the obvious thing. I'm going to put out a call all throughout Israel. We'll send messengers out and we'll gather an army. Now, what is Gideon's plan? I'm sure it's this. They've got 135,000. Let's aim for, well, let's say 150,000. That gives us enough plus. It'll give us a buffer zone, a comfort zone. And that's always the way we want it to work, isn't it? We want to have enough plus. I think we work very hard to get enough so that we don't have to trust God. And I'm sure that's what Gideon's trying here. I want enough so that I don't have to trust God. I want enough and more than enough. But Gideon's plan falls short in Judges chapter 7, verse 3. We find there that Gideon only gathers 32,000. So Gideon does the obvious. He sends out the word. But the best that Gideon can do through his own strength, his own planning, is gather 32,000. He's still outnumbered 4-1. Now, remember Gideon's temperament from last week? He's timid. He's fearful. He must be petrified now. I've done my best. I'm still outnumbered 4-1. Now what? Now, Gideon must learn this lesson. The battle is the Lord's. That's what the Lord wants to teach him. The battle is the Lord's. The battle is mine, Gideon. That's the way it works. We enter into God's purposes and we succeed when we have His plan, which takes prayer. Don't see that with Gideon right now. It takes listening. God, just tell us what to do. It takes obedience. Tell us what to do and we'll do it. And then we step into that plan depending upon God's power. And so we want to know what God's telling us to do, His plan, not our own. And then when we step into that plan, we want to step into it depending upon His power, not our own. And then we'll have success. Gideon's not there yet. But this is so important, brothers and sisters, for us to learn in our own life and here at Saving Grace Community Church, because I can tell you throughout the years of being involved in church and being involved in ministry, I can tell you how easy it is for a church just to depend upon their own methods, their own schemes, just to depend upon the obvious. I have seen so many important decisions made without prayer at all. And it's kind of like you just feel the pressure. Well, we've got to do something. Let's do this. It seems good. Instead of waiting and being patient and saying, God, what do you want us to do? We need your plan. Then we step out into our planning, our schemes, our methods, just doing the obvious, and we expect God to bless it. And you know what? He's not going to. God will not bless our plans. God will not bless when we rely upon our own strength and our own resources. Here's what's happening here. Gideon must learn that his wisdom isn't wise enough and his resources aren't strong enough. His strength isn't strong enough. We have to learn this too. Now, here's the thing. How does God teach Gideon this invaluable lesson that your wisdom isn't wise enough, your strength isn't strong enough, you need my plan and you need to depend upon me, the battle is the Lord's? How does God teach Gideon that? You know what? Here's how he does it. He allows Gideon to try his best and fail. That's how God does it. We have to somehow come to an end of ourselves. And how that happens is we try our best. We wear ourselves out. We become frustrated. And eventually we cry out, God, I need you. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. Now, at the same time God is allowing Gideon, this is really interesting to me, at the same time God is allowing Gideon to try his best and fail, God is arranging circumstances that Gideon is facing to make them so impossible for Gideon to do that it's going to force Gideon to trust. So you've got two things going on here. You've got Gideon trying his best and failing, and you've got God arranging circumstances to where Gideon can look at those circumstances and see that the task is so huge, my best could never do it anyway. I'm not big enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not wise enough. I need God. So you've got these two kind of dynamics going on at the same time. Now, that's the way God works in our life. And this is exactly what happened. I was thinking about this, and when we went to England and planted a church over there, Carrie and I had to learn the same exact lesson, that we're not wise enough. We're not talented enough. We don't have the abilities that are necessary to do it. See, we went over to England, and the call to go to England was crystal clear. No doubt in our mind. And so I hit English soil, trusting in God, totally confident that He was going to bless, because it was His idea. It wasn't my idea. He's the one who was sending us. So we started a church in our own home, did the obvious. I ran an ad in a paper. I thought, you know what? God's really going to bless us. There's going to be so much interest in this ad. We got two calls, and both of them were negative. Who do you think you are, American, coming over here and doing this on English soil? I'm like, wow. And so we started the church, though, in our home. And after 1 year of my brilliant leadership, the church grew from 9 to 7. I was discouraged and I was confused. And I thought, Lord, we answered your call. This was your idea, remember? So I thought you were going to bless this church thing. Now, here's the problem. We were self-reliant. We were relying on our own plans. We were relying on our own abilities. See, we had been in ministry for over 20 years, in successful ministries, big church. We had experience, we had a plan, and we had pride. No problem. We can do this. We can do this. But God let us fail again and again and again. Nothing worked. Nothing worked. So God was teaching us that our wisdom wasn't wise enough and our best wasn't good enough. He was moving us to a place of relying on Him rather than on us. And He was using our failure and our frustration to do that. I remember falling on my face in our bedroom one day and crying out, God, I'm afraid. We've left everything. I've moved my family 6,000 miles from home and nothing's working. Nothing. Help me. God, help me. I can't do this. I don't know what to do. I've hit England with my best shot and England hasn't flinched. And I'm just wearing myself out. And nothing's working. And I remember just crying out, God, you just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Help me. That point of desperation was the turning point in our ministry in England. And you know what? It usually is. It usually is. When we finally come to an end of ourselves and say, God, I just can't do it. You tell me what to do. I'll follow you and I'll rely on you and your resources. See, God began to move when we became needy, when we became desperate, when we finally admitted we can't do it, and we finally dropped the pride and said, God, if anything's going to happen here, it's going to be because of you, and obviously not because of us. This battle is yours. The battle is the Lord's. See, I think in each one of our cases, God has to deal with things like pride. We want to take some credit, don't we? And so we want to think that, oh, yeah, it was God, but it was me too. I had a pretty good plan, and I've been trained in this. I know what I'm doing, and I. And so, yes, it's God and me. And God's saying, no, it's me. And you get to tag along and work with me, but it's me. And until we're ready to admit that, God is not going to use us because He's not going to cement into our thinking a self-reliance that keeps us away from Him, that keeps us away from needing Him, that keeps us away from depending upon Him. And so that's what happened to us in England. And when we finally admitted we can't do this, God, and I remember turning the church over to Him again, you know, because it's so easy to say, I'm relying on God and it's your church. Those are easy words. But usually what drives us to really meaning that is when we get desperate and we failed so much that we really mean it when we say, God, this is your church. You do whatever you want. And that's what happened. And at that point, it started to grow and it's still growing. And they just were able to buy their own building. You saw the pastor, he taught here, and it's just going from strength to strength. And so we're so blessed about that. But I'll tell you what, that was one of the most painful years of my life. That first year in England as nothing worked. This is what Gideon's learning right here. Gideon is learning that his best isn't good enough. And God is teaching him that through allowing him to try to do his best and seeing failure. And again, like I said, at the same time, he's arranging circumstances so it looks so impossible that Gideon measures his abilities against that circumstance and says, there is no way. Our resources could never do this. And so God is making Gideon into a God-dependent man. Let's see how God does this. Very interesting, convincing Gideon of his need. Gideon's done his best. 32,000 respond. He's still outnumbered 4-1. He's probably worried sick now. He's probably scheming, manipulating. And the thought in his mind, I'm sure, is how do I get more soldiers? This is the need. How do I get the word out? How do I get all the programs in place that will attract them? But God's thinking is much different than man's. Isaiah 55, 9 says this, "For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." Gideon is about to find out how true that scripture is, that God's thinking is different than ours. God doesn't say, "Gideon, you're right. The problem is you need more men." Look at verse 2 in chapter 7. He says, "Gideon, your problem is that you have too many men." Too many. The Lord said to Gideon, "The people with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand." God says, "The solution is obvious, Gideon. We need to reduce the numbers." Look at verse 3. "Now therefore, proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return home and hurry away from Mount Gilead." Look at this. "Then 22,000 of the people returned and 10,000 remained." Gideon says this, 22,000 say, "Praise the Lord," grab their stuff and go home. Now, can you imagine the rest that remained, the 10,000 that remained? I'm sure they're looking at Gideon and going, "Oh, well done. Great job of leading there, Gideon. We're outnumbered 4-1, and now you sent 2/3 of our men home. Good job." Listen, being a leader sometimes is extremely lonely because you have to do things that aren't popular sometimes. Now, in their thinking, this is now a disaster, isn't it? Couldn't get worse. Oh, yeah? God's not done yet. Look at verse 4 and 5. He says, "Gideon, you still have too many." And the Lord said to Gideon, "The people are still too many. Take them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. And any one of whom I say to you, 'This one shall go with you,' shall go with you. And any one of whom I say to you, 'This one shall not go with you,' shall not go." So he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, "Everyone who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set by himself. Likewise, everyone who kneels down to drink." And so in verse 6 and 7, he says, basically, separate out those who lap water like a dog. Keep them, but those who kneel down to drink, send them home. 9,700 kneel down to drink. Great. 300 lap water like a dog and stay. God has reduced Gideon's army down to 300 people to go up against 135,000. Do you notice something here? Something in this story? That everything is contrary to how we think. God's ways are different than ours. Do you see why, when you look at something like this, the way God plans, why a church must pray, must wait on the Lord and say, "God, what do you want us to do?" Because, Lord, if we just come up with plans out of our mind, it's not going to match up with your plans, obviously, because your ways are higher than ours. Your ways are different. And so, Lord, we are going to wait here and we are going to seek you until you talk to us. Because we're never going to think like he does. See, we think to win a war, our army must be bigger. God says numbers don't matter. We are content when we have enough resources, then some more, because we want that buffer zone. God is content when it's 300 against 135,000, when the odds against us are 450-1. That's when he's enjoying himself. Now, the question is, why does God do things like that to us? Look at verse 2. He tells us, "The Lord said to Gideon, 'The people with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hand, lest Israel boast over me, saying, my own hand has saved me.'" See it there? See, when God moves, when God gives success, he doesn't want any misunderstandings. He doesn't want us to sit back and look at the success and say, "You know what? Wow, we really came up with a great plan, didn't we? We're brilliant." He doesn't want us to think, "Well, you know what? That's because of our resources, our ability to get money or bring people together, put teams together and do this or that." He doesn't want us to think it's because of our talents, our strengths. He doesn't want us to look back at ourselves at all. He likes it when it seems so impossible that the odds are so set against us that we know if this is going to happen, it's got to be because of God alone. And when it does happen, We can only stand back and say, you know what? That was God. He gets the glory, not us. We hate it when things look impossible. God loves it. And not only does God love it when things look impossible, God creates it. He is the one who moves things around, orchestrates things so that things do seem impossible. God is the God who loves to take His people and set them against the Red Sea on one side and the Egyptian army on the other, and there's no way out. Talk about impossible. We're dead unless you do something, God. And God says, okay, I'm going to do something. I'm going to open up the Red Sea and you're going to walk across on dry land. Then I'm going to close it back up on the Egyptians. I've got this one covered. And what happens when they get on the other side of the Red Sea? All they can do is worship. God had moved. He loves situations like that. He loves situations like calling somebody 6,000 miles from home, sending them to England, and allowing them to be crushed by the spiritual hardness and come to a place where they say, you know what? England's too difficult to plant a church in. I don't see how this can happen. And then when He moves, all you can do is say, that was God. Because our best just failed. Our best was useless. But God has done something. He makes the odds so improbable that when there is success, He gets the glory. Our faith is increased. Our hearts are ignited. We become more confident, more God-dependent. We grow in our willingness to take risk in the future because we see how exciting it is to watch Him move. But like I said, if He blesses our plans done in our strength, the only thing that would happen is He would send the message, you can do it and you don't really need Me. And He is not going to do that. And if we could do it in our own strength, what would happen? I mean, would we achieve much for the kingdom? No. We wouldn't achieve much at all. But when it's His plan, His strength, then great things can happen. So if God is going to use us as a church or as individuals, He must let us fail until we are just worn out, until we come to a place of need where we cry out, I can't do this. Help us. Help me. I need Your plan. And I need Your strength. And when that happens, we go, well, that seems like I'm pretty weak. No, but when I'm weak, I'm strong. When I'm weak enough to look up, look away from myself, look up and depend upon Him, that's when I'm strong, right? When we do that as a church, that's when we're strong as a church. So maybe you're there this morning. Maybe you're facing impossible situations, it seems. And you've done your best. You've schemed, you've manipulated, you've done everything you can do, and it just seems to be going from bad to worse. Like in Gideon's life, from bad to worse. Let me reduce it down to 10,000 men, and now down to 300 men against 135,000. It just seems to be going from bad to worse. Listen, God is probably just moving you to that place where you'll just finally turn that situation over to Him and trust Him. And rely upon Him so that He can move and so that He gets the glory and your faith is increased. So be encouraged. God will move at the right time, but He needs to work in your heart first. Because when God moves, He does it in a way that maximizes what He's doing. He's not just doing things. Okay, I'll meet that need. He's meeting that need in a way that maximizes His glory. Your dependence upon Him that increases your faith, that increases your love, that ignites your heart when you see Him move. He's doing all these things. And so trust Him. Be encouraged. It's never impossible with God. In fact, when it's impossible, that's when He loves to move. Now, the next thing we see in Gideon's path to real effectiveness, he is being called out of the comfort zone big time, isn't he? Talk about being called out of the comfort zone. Talk about having no buffer zone. Talk about having to rely on God. Gideon, I've left you with 300 men. You're going to go against 135,000. That's moving outside of a comfort zone. That's taking risk, isn't it? That's risky faith. Remember Gideon, his characteristic. He's fearful. He's timid. What is Gideon going to have to learn if he's going to do that? Well, he's going to have to learn how to deal with fear, isn't he? And everybody who serves God, everybody who's effective for God, is going to have to learn how to deal with fear, because God calls us out of the comfort zone. When He uses us, He doesn't leave us there in the comfort zone where we don't really need Him. He calls us to take risk. And to do that, we have to learn how to deal with fear. Gideon must learn to deal with his fear. Now, we can allow fear to do one of two things in our life. One is negative, one is positive. I want to show you that you can use fear in a very effective way that makes you more useful to God, more effective for Him. First of all, we can let fear paralyze us and stop us in our tracks, lead us into disobedience. Or secondly, we can use that same fear to push us towards God, to drive us to Him, to depend upon His resources. Now, Gideon is still afraid, but Gideon obviously chooses the second track. He refuses to let fear stop him from serving God. Now, I want you to know this, that that's exactly what the devil wants to do with fear in your life. He wants to use it to stop you from serving God. He wants to use it so that you'll just sit down, be a good little boy and girl, boy or girl, not boy and girl, but boy or girl, and not take any risk, not be effective for God at all. We see this over in Nehemiah. Nehemiah, they're rebuilding the wall in Jerusalem. They're doing this work that God has set them out to do. There are enemies there, enemies of the Jews, who are attacking them, starting rumors, they're threatening them. And Nehemiah says in Nehemiah 6:9 why they were doing that. They were all trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and it will not be completed. See that? Their hands will get too weak. Why? Because of fear. And that'll stop them from doing the work. So, how do we cope with fear then, so that doesn't happen? Well, first of all, recognize it's there. I mean, don't deny it. Be real. We all have fear, don't we? There's nobody in this room here that never has any fear. And there's nobody in this room that will never experience fear when God calls you out of that comfort zone. So just admit it's there. But then, listen, you have to decide what that fear is going to do to you. You have a choice. Am I going to let this fear master me and stop me and keep me from doing what God is calling me to do? Or am I going to use this fear to move me towards God, to depend upon Him and His resources and His strength? That's what Nehemiah did. That's how he handled it. In Nehemiah 6:9, it says, they were all trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work and it will not be completed. But I prayed, now strengthen my hands. What did he do? He said, okay, they're trying to frighten us. This is a scary situation. God strengthened me. I'm not going to stop. He went right to God. Earlier, under another attack in Nehemiah 4:14, it says, after I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. They were afraid. Then he says, remember the Lord who is great and awesome. Fight for your brothers, your sons, and your daughters, your wives, and your homes. Don't be afraid. Instead, remember God. Let this fear drive you to Him. And remember who He is, how great He is, that He is able to handle this. This is not too big for Him. It's too big for you. It's frightening for you. It's not too big for Him. Remember Him. So the question is not, do you have fear? Listen, I know the answer to that. You do. The question is, what are you going to do with it? That's the question that's important. What are you going to do with that fear? Will you allow it to stop you from serving God, or will you choose to use it for your advantage to drive you closer to God? Will it stop you from serving God, or will that fear enhance your service? See? You can use fear to your advantage. Will you be honest with God and pour your heart out to Him? Just go to Him and say, God, I am afraid right now, but I don't want that to stop me. I can't let that stop me. I trust You to help me and empower me to accomplish what You're calling me to do. I choose faith over fear, and even though I'm trembling, I trust You with the consequences. And so, God, I am going to step out trusting You. I can't let this stop me, because if I start letting fear stop me from serving You, you know what? I'll never serve You. I'll give fear a foothold in my life. And Romans says, Romans 6, I believe it is, says, whatever we give ourselves to becomes our master. And some of us are giving ourselves to fear, allowing it to control us, and it's mastering us, and it's keeping us from answering the call of God on our life. And so we've got to come to a place where we say, I'm not going to let fear do that. And God, even though I'm trembling, I trust you, and I'm going to step into your plan, I'm going to let this fear drive me to you, where I rely upon you and depend upon you. I'm going to do what you say. Fear can enhance our effectiveness for God if we choose to use fear in that way. And when you step into his plan, we're going to see this with Gideon next week. When you step into his plan, even though you're trembling, but you're trusting, you'll discover he steps out with you. And you'll discover that that is the exciting Christian life. That is where the adventure begins. God using you, him moving through you, him doing things around you and working situations out. And you're thinking, wow, this is awesome. We're going to see that in Gideon next week. Don't miss it. So we can't let fear master us. It wants to. If we're going to be used, we have to choose faith over fear, don't we? That's our next point. Gideon must trust God with risky faith. Let's add that, with risky faith. You know what? The kind of faith that Gideon has and that we must have, I call it risky faith because it's different than saving faith. Because you can be saved with little faith, right? Trust in Jesus and you're saved. But to be used to impact our community, to make a difference in this world, that takes faith that is greater. That takes risky faith. And so Gideon has risky faith, we're going to see. 2 Corinthians 5:7 says the Christian life is a life of faith, for we walk by faith, not by sight. The Christian life is a life of one choice of faith after another, isn't it? Have you noticed that? All the way into glory. It's one choice of faith after another. One decision after another. What's going to master me at this point? Fear or faith? What am I going to choose here? And since God is always trying to call us out of the comfort zone, there's always going to be that choice. Fear or faith. And it might be as little as you hear that little whisper, go tell them about me. You got a choice, don't you? Fear or faith. Or it can be as big as, I want you to pack up your family, everything that you have, and I want you to move to another country as a missionary. And everything in between. But listen, there's going to be these choices of fear or faith all through our Christian life, right? It's just the way it is. And these choices determine what kind of Christianity we're going to experience. Let me show you what I mean in the life of Gideon. Gideon wanted to see the mighty deeds his fathers had seen. Look at verse 12 and 13 again in Judges 6. Remember that? He says, and the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor. Now look at what Gideon says. And Gideon said to him, please, sir, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his wonderful deeds that our fathers recounted to us, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? It's a great desire. We saw that last week. Here's Gideon's desire. I want to see God move like the stories I've heard, like our fathers told us about. I want to see the mighty deeds of God. But here's the question, Gideon. Are you willing to believe God like they did? Are you willing to trust God like they did? They saw God move like they did because they trusted God and stepped into his plan even when they were trembling. They were afraid, but they did what he said. They had a faith that enabled them to act. God tells Moses, march in and tell Pharaoh, let my people go. Moses is afraid, but he does it. And he sees God move. God tells Joshua, here's my plan, Joshua. I'm going to give you Jericho, but here's the way it's going to happen. I want you to march around the city walls once for 6 days. 6 days in a row, march around once. Then on the seventh day, march around seven times, and when you finish that seventh round, shout, and the walls are going to fall down. Now, can you imagine being Joshua and having to take that plan to your people? Okay, got the plan. Here's how we're going to take Jericho. We're going to march and shout. Really? But Joshua, risky faith. He said, that's what God told me. That's the plan. He does it. And he saw God move mightily. Those walls fell down. Almost all of the walls. You know what? There was one little piece remaining that didn't fall down. It was Rahab's apartment. God said, I'll save you. The rest of the city walls. He saw God move, though. Here's the point. Because he took a chance. Because he was willing to trust God and act on that. And so, Gideon, you want to see God move like they did? Then are you willing to trust him like they did? Are you willing to have risky faith? Will you step out of your comfort zone like they did? Will you step onto that battlefield even though you're outnumbered, but you're trusting God? That's what they did. Great question for Gideon, isn't it? Great question for us. I mean, I like asking Gideon that. But at the same time, I've got to ask myself, Bill, what about you? Are you willing to step out and trust God, take a risk, live by faith? Because you know what? I've been asking God to show us what he wants us to do as a church. That's been one of my prayers lately. And I've been asking him to give us faith, to trust him for big things, risky things, things that take us beyond our abilities, beyond our resources, out of the comfort zone. Because I really want to see God move, don't you? My heart longs for that. But the question is, the same for us as it was for Gideon. Are we willing to trust him enough to take risk? Are we willing to trust him for big things? God, we want to make a difference in this world as a church. We want to impact our community. We want to be out on the mission field. God, we want to see you move. But will we take a risk? Will we step out of our comfort zone? I mean, this is exciting stuff. Think about who I serve. I serve the same God that Moses did, that Joshua did, that Peter and Paul did. And I understand they're just all ordinary men, ordinary people like us, right? But they were serious about sin and obedience, holiness. They had learned to depend upon God, not self. They had learned to deal with their fear, not letting it paralyze them. They had learned how to trust God, even when they were trembling, step into his plan. They had a faith that was real, a faith that acted. See, it's easy to talk a good faith game, isn't it? But real faith acts. Real faith has action behind it. It's much more than words. And I am praying that God will do that in our hearts. I am praying that God will make us people of bold faith, courageous people, people that are ready to take risk. People who want to be on the front line of Christianity, where the action is. Listen, I don't want to have a desk job in Christianity back behind the lines in the comfort zone. It's boring. It is so boring. I want to be on the front lines, making a difference. But that's going to take faith, isn't it? I'm going to have to deal with my fear, and I am going to have to replace fear with a faith that is willing to take risk and trust God. May God do that with all of us here at Saving Grace Community Church. As your pastor, that's what I'm praying for you. And that's what I'm praying for me. And this is what we're going to see in the next week. Gideon chooses to trust God even though he's trembling. He steps onto the battlefield and he sees God move like he wanted. His desire, I want to see you move, God. I want to see the mighty deeds like my fathers talked about. When he finally steps onto the battlefield, terrified but trusting, that is when he sees God move. And he sees the mighty deeds he longed to see. Now, let me ask you this before I close up. Do you think he was sorry he obeyed? Do you think he was sorry that he took a risk and stepped out of the comfort zone? I mean, he could have said no, like I said earlier. And he could have continued to live in fear. He could have continued to thresh wheat in that wine press. He could have continued having so little of God in his life that he felt forsaken and abandoned. He could have continued just remembering the stories from his fathers that were saying how great God was and all the mighty deeds that God has done. But he had never seen any in his own life. He could continue like that. Or he can replace fear with faith, obey, take a risk, and see God begin to use him. He can start to experience God in his life. He can begin to see those mighty deeds like he desired to. What do you think he thought was the best choice looking back? Listen, same choice you and I have, isn't it? It's the same choice we have. We can trust God, step into His plan, and be used, or we can cling to the comfort zone, cling to safety, go back to our wine press and thresh wheat in fear, never seeing God do anything. I know what choice I want to make, and I know where I want to see this church go. But we'll see how exciting obedience is next week. So, the person God uses, ordinary men and women like you and I, who are serious about sin and obedience, who are God-dependent rather than self-dependent, who learn how to use fear positively, using it to push them towards God rather than paralyze them and stop them, and who replace their fear with faith. Faith that acts. Faith that takes risk. That steps into God's plan even when you're trembling. And again, next week we'll see the results of living like that. Very exciting. Father, I pray that You would call us to risky faith. Lord, I pray that You would help us to let go of the comfort zone, to let go of the idols of ease, abundance, materialism. And Lord, that we would listen to what You're saying to us, that we would not just talk about hearing Your plan, but never taking the time to listen. Father, I pray that You would listen, that we would listen and hear and obey it, step into it. Father, in those areas of unbelief, Lord, I pray that You would help us to make the choice to overcome those with faith, that we wouldn't let fear master us any longer, that we would be bold and courageous, that we would know that when we step into Your plans, You step into those plans with us, and that that is the exciting Christian life. That is where the adventure begins. Lord, don't let us settle for mediocrity. Don't let us settle for not making a difference in this world. Lord, call us to Yourself. Call us into Your plan. Show us at a church what the next steps are. Lord, where You want us to go, what You want us to be involved in. Give us Your plan, Lord. Give us the courage to hear it and obey it. Give us the wisdom to depend upon You. In Jesus' name, amen.